The next case on our calendar is 96-2805, Disciplinary Council versus William Deems Clifton II. Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Gary Lewis. I'm here today on behalf of Mr. Clifton, the respondent, and today, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
How many?
Your Honor, so we're here today to file the respondent's file, the brief, the findings of fact, and the recommendations for this court today, the Board of Commissioners, that I find permanently disbarred. We're not here today suggesting this court that this conduct is justifiable or is anything other than reasonable, in some respects, egregious. What I am suggesting to the court today is that I feel there are some mitigating circumstances that hopefully the court will consider that would indicate that permanent disbarment is appropriate. I ask the court to consider that my client's practiced law for 23 years, full time. During that 23 years, there hasn't been any prior disciplinary sanction, no prior disciplinary action taken against him. The evidence before this court, the evidence.
But when he violated the rules, he did it in a big way, didn't he?
I would say that's correct. And in a big way, is limited to this case, but there's no question it was a big way.
An elderly woman in a nursing home, and he just milked her estate, and isn't that the probate court orders him to repay $400,000 that he apparently misused, appropriated to his own use? And why should we consider letting Mr. Deems continue to practice law at all in Ohio? That's what you want to tell us.
I need to address that today, primarily. From what I can gather from many of this court's opinions, restitution is a factor that's important. And there was $172,400, number one, that's one of the issues in the case that was borrowed by Mr. Clifton. There were promissory notes executed, and that $172,400 was repaid. That was the principal represented by the promissory notes.
Was that paid pursuant to the notes, or was it paid because someone realized he signed the notes and then he had to pay up?
It was paid voluntarily. There wasn't an order of court at that time. There was a criminal investigation that had begun, and at that point, Mr. Clifton had resigned as guardian, but was in the process of attempting to file final accounts. The estate was in such disarray at that point, attempted to file a number of accounts, all of which were rejected. During that period of time, the restitution was made as the principal of the six promissory notes. The evidence before the panel, the hearing, also indicated, though, that Mr. Clifton testified that at the time that he executed those notes, they were executed contemporaneously with borrowing the money, and that the original of those notes, the originals, were put in the safety deposit box. Copies were put in the estate file, and the reason he did that was so something disastrous happened to him, that someone would know that those monies had been borrowed. And I believe that that's a mitigating circumstance.
Is he required, as a guardian required to have the court, the probate court, approve loans from a guardian's estate, from a ward's estate?
I'm not sure that loans from an estate would ever be approved, but there's no question that the loans were inappropriate, that they were done without knowledge of the court, knowledge of the ward. She was incompetent. She couldn't have consented and permission and saw it. So that's certainly not an issue. That was inappropriate. Your Honor, I would like to address the $400,000 issue. $400,000 was the subject of a judgment by the probate court after extensive hearings that the probate court filed it based on categories of losses, some of which were losses that were incurred to the estate. And some, though, for example, $67,000 of that $400,000 was amounted to attorney and guardianship fees that Mr. Clinton had been paid and that he was ordered to reimburse to the estate. And also there was interest as part of that statutory interest after the judgment and also interest on the promissory notes. Interest on the promissory notes was $18,000. Of that $400,000, the evidence before the hearing panel was that $350,000 has been repaid or has been paid by bonding companies. There was an insurance dollar in place, and that insurance company got involved. There is testimony about that record before the court. The bonding company got involved at the time, just before the judgment was entered, really at the time the hearings were taking place in probate court. There were a series of negotiations then between the estate and Aetna, and so $400,350 has been paid to the estate as a result of negotiations between Aetna and the estate. So I would also ask the court to take that into consideration in assessing losses, at least against the estate. The evidence before the panel also was. And there were mitigation witnesses presented, six essentially character witnesses testified that other than this case, other than this series of events, my client enjoyed a fine reputation in the community within the Cincinnati legal community. He was active in the Bar Association, served as chairman of the Grievance Committee, served as chairman of the Ethics Committee for a number of years, not just 1 year at a time. And testimony by these witnesses and some of these witnesses was they felt it really made a difference in terms of giving his time to other lawyers. In addition to just sitting out in committees and working on the cases, he was always willing to give up his time. And I'd ask the court to consider that also. Another factor that I think it's significant that I've seen in cases from this court the complaint that was initially filed against my client alleged that he was indicted by Hamilton County Grand Jury, and there was evidence before the panel that he was found not guilty of that offense, and that's set out in the findings of facts of the Board of Commissioners at page 5. So there was a trial at the Hamilton County Court of Common Pleas on aggravated theft, and all financial transactions that were issued in this case were stipulated to and was applied to by the Common Pleas Judge at Hamilton County. That he was not guilty of aggravated theft.
Not guilty of theft, and I was concerned about that issue because if he's not guilty of theft, that means there was no dishonesty. If there was no dishonesty, the question becomes moral turpitude. There was clearly a violation of the disciplinary rules. Was all the money found then that he took to be borrowing as opposed to stealing?
Well, Your Honor, specifically, my understanding of the judgment entry in the criminal court, and I believe that entry, well, I know I properly at least at the hearing, but the judge found that there was no proof of intent to permanently deprive the estate, which is obviously a necessary element of the defense. So I believe that was the specific reason for the not guilty.
Was that a jury waiver?
Yes, it was. It was submitted to the court, and it was the state's case was stipulated. There were, I did not represent Mr. Clinton in the criminal proceeding. But
did you know what was heard by the court?
Yes, I do.
Was the information about the stock split given to him at that time?
Yes.
Where when the stock split, your client would take the split stock, cash it, put it into his own company, the Jamaica Trading Shares Company, and he time it split, he would put that into his own company under his own name, and that accumulated to about $105,000. Did he hear that evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. The way it was presented to the trial court, there were detailed stipulations worked out between the prosecution and defense counsel, a number of drafts.
Were those facts stipulated to, as I've read?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he heard that?
Yes.
Was that a loan?
I assume the judge took it.
Is that a loan?
Is that a loan?
Testimony of the criminal trial on behalf of the state.
Did the court say that that was a loan?
I don't think the court specifically said that was a loan. But
he specifically found there was no theft involved, no evidence that he was intending to keep the money permanently. I see.
Yes. And just to follow up on your question, there was no testimony in the state. The state's case was essentially stipulated, and then there were character witnesses presented in the criminal trial. I'd also like to address this issue of the conduct incident to contact the ward. Mr. Clifton testified at the disciplinary hearing and essentially took issue with many of these statements that were allegations that he was totally neglecting his ward, that he wasn't there, that he ignored general and medical needs. I won't belabor that now, other than to say that we have briefed him fully. He testified extensively as to contacts that he had. I think the court will find that you were giving testimony from the nursing home staff, that their recollection was pretty vague. He did say that they didn't see Mr. Clifton very much, but he indicated that when he went there, one of the reasons that he didn't call ahead of time to announce himself was he didn't want them making preparations, and his ward wasn't being cared for properly. He didn't want to alert them ahead of time when he was shoving them and allow some prior arrangements to be made. He wanted to show up. He felt there was a good reason to show up unannounced and come in the side door so he could check things out objectively without...
Counsel, we all try to be temperate in these things, but I'm still... Your time's about to expire, and I'm searching for any redeeming quality that you have to offer on tonight on behalf of your client as to why we should ever need him or want him in the practice of law.
I think the most important aspect of this case is that although it's egregious, it was a one-time...
Over 6 years.
That's... And I can't explain that, Your Honor, other than to say that the conduct is limited to this.
Well, I guess I'm suggesting we shouldn't try.
That was important to the jury witnesses also, and that's why I dwelt on it, because there were witnesses who testified that know Mr. Clifton and knew him a lot better than I do, and I think the mitigation testimony could probably, if you would just review that, but I can tell this court that all six of these witnesses, one of them was a past president of the Bar Association, these were lawyers and leaders of the community that knew Mr. Clifton well, expressed amazement that he was involved in this, and everybody did. And I can only suggest, although it did go on for a number of years, that it's not going to happen again. It's isolated. I can't call it an isolated incident, but it's a situation where it happened on one file and didn't happen on any other files in 23 years.
I guess, well, yeah, we're confined to the record, but I guess very frankly, when someone treats a person like this, uses their estate, doesn't buy them clothing, they have to get clothing out of the nursing homes, whatever it is, their storage room, their hand-off clothing that other people leave, and then comes in and says, well, this is the only case in which I did that. I guess I've just, it's almost counterintuitive to me to think that this is, and we keep it to the record, I understand, but that argument to me just is not very persuasive, because this, what he did here is so representative of what the public thinks too much about lawyers when they have access to someone's money who's incompetent. I mean, it's just the worst case example of that situation, it seems to me, the first one I've seen, where it's a woman incompetent and she's not even being cared for. I mean, and I know you argued differently in your brief, but the panel found, the board found, apparently believed that the nursing home representatives who indicate that, I mean, if he at least had paid some attention to her, that might be a little bit of mitigation, but here she's got, it winds up with $800,000 estate, and she's scraping along out there at the nursing home while he's taking her money. I don't know where all the judges, all the lawyers can say how wonderful he's been, but sometimes people who commit murder have been wonderful people before they commit the murder, and that's kind of what we have here, obviously not to that extent, but it's his conduct that I don't know how we say, well, okay, you've been a good lawyer, obviously a good member of the bar, and how do we overlook what he's done? I guess that's the dilemma we have.
Well, I'm not asking you to overlook it. I'm suggesting that the circumstances is too severe. And just very briefly, in response to your comment about care, that was the subject of at Lake Festival. I referred to it the brief time I'm over again.
Yeah.
I know the board made that factual finding, but hopefully the court will take another look at that as a finding of fact and evaluate that testimony. So he was specific about when he went there and his clothing issues and you know, made.
I guess to give you one more chance, I don't see anything here that says this. I mean, it's an aberration, I guess your argument is, but sometimes there's alcohol involved or drugs or there's the lawyers under tremendous stress and they take money. There's none of that here, is there? Is it a character flaw or is it, what is it? Do we know?
At the hearing was that he needed the money to keep a law office open, to meet business expenses and personal expenses. But I agree with you, there's none of the, this isn't a gambling problem, this isn't drugs, this isn't some huge problem that arose overnight and dealt with. This situation is basically a solo practitioner, struggling to stay in business and using money to pay the overhead and pay the mortgage.
Thanks.
For the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you.
Ms. Brown.
May I please support Lori Brown for Relator Jeffrey Stern, Disciplinary Counsel. I'll address a couple of the issues raised by the respondent. First of all, with regard to the promissory notes. The promissory notes for $172,000 was above and beyond the $400,000 he was ordered to pay by the probate court. The respondent between 1986 and 1991 borrowed the money, $172,000, from the estate of Alma K. Wine. The promissory notes that he claims to have executed simultaneously with borrowing the money were not produced by the respondent until 11 months after he resigned as the guardian of the estate. He did not repay the money, the principal amount of $172,000, to the estate until January of 1994, which was fully 1 year after his resignation. Now, my question to the court and to the respondent would be, if you really wanted someone to know you were borrowing money from an estate, first of all, you would ask the probate court for permission to do so, which is required under probate law. Second, you would put those promissory notes in your annual reports. You would list them as part of the assets of the estate. Say, if you weren't loaning money to yourself and you were loaning it to your sister or to your neighbor from an estate that you had charge of, assuming that the the ward was incompetent. He couldn't get her permission, so he would ask the probate court for their permission to do so. He didn't do any of those things. He did not even put the promissory notes in his final accounting that he submitted to the probate court.
What's the net loss of the state today?
I can answer that question in two parts. First of all, the $400,000 that was ordered to be paid by Mr. Clifton to the estate was paid by Aetna Insurance, the bonding company. They settled with the estate for $350,000. Aetna Insurance has not been reimbursed by Mr. Clifton. So to say that he has made reimbursement, made restitution, and shown remorse by doing so is absolutely not true.
So the estate's down $50,000 plus lost investment opportunity.
The lost investment opportunities were completely covered in the probate court's opinion. In the different areas that found, for example, if you take any particular year, 1989 and 1990, there were interest dividends paid, for example, on different stocks and not deposited in a timely manner by the respondent. The court figured they had a CPA, obviously, that did the analysis.
So that's included in the 400?
Yes.
So they're down 50 by the court's calculation?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's it at this point, in terms
yes.
of the estate?
Yes. The other issue that was raised by the respondent is the issue of the criminal charges. First of all, the Ohio State Bar Association versus Weaver, which is the 1975 case that's cited in Relator's brief, indicates that a criminal finding of innocence is not res judicata. The parties are not the same. The level of evidence is not the same. In this case in particular, the entire criminal case was somewhat unusual in that the facts were stipulated. The trial court had a complete set of stipulated facts in front of her. She did not have witnesses for the prosecution. They stipulated all the facts. She did find, and this is from her decision, that the state failed to provide essential details of respondent's activity. I would submit that for this court to analyze the probate court record and the court of appeals decision, you will find those essential details. I don't know if it's aggravated theft or not, but that's clearly not the purpose of disciplinary counsel. We needed to prove by clear and convincing evidence, as opposed to beyond a reasonable doubt, that the respondent did take Mrs. Kaywine's funds, that he did neglect her, and that he should be, as recommended by the court unanimously, he should be permanently disbarred.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Lewis, you use your time, but you may take 30 seconds if you'd like.
The entry ordering restitution, the probate court entry, included a number of categories, and of that, $466,985 amounts to Mr. Clifton being ordered to repay the estate that amount. So I just want to make that clear that the estate did benefit somewhat during his tenure, although the other conduct far outweighs it, but the estate did grow from about $200,000 when he initially became involved to, I think, $1.2 million or $1.3 million. So it wasn't like there wasn't a benefit at all to the war. The final accountings certainly created a disastrous situation, but there wasn't a benefit. So I really don't agree that the estate's out $50,000. This is a situation where there was going to be an action on the bond, which was going to involve more litigation. The bond just couldn't be called, and the estate just couldn't.
So it grew by that amount, counting the amount that the bond company paid in?
I think that would be a not including the amount the bond company paid in, because that was when the first inventory and account was filed by the successor guardian. I think it was at $1.2 million, so $350,000 would be in addition to
he shouldn't be a lawyer, he should be an investment
company.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. case is submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion.